And now it's time for the Earth First Update. All the environmental news you can use. Uncle Dennis here at Free Radio Santa Cruz on Thursday, January 21st, 2016. I suggest you have a pencil and paper handy to take down names, addresses, telephone numbers, web pages, all that information that will help you to take action right now. Let's start with announcements. The California Native Plant Society, Santa Cruz County Chapter Habitat Restoration Team, is having a restoration this Saturday, January 23rd from 10 a.m. to 1 p.m. at the Quail Hollow Ranch County Park. We will return to the sandhills of Quail Hollow Ranch and continue our broom bash efforts removing invasive non-native French broom while helping to restore this unique habitat. We have had plenty of rain, which makes for ideal pulling conditions. See you there. To get to Quail Hollow, take Graham Hill Road from Santa Cruz. As you come down the hill into Felton, take the first right up East Zayeti Road. Go up 2 miles and turn left on Quail Hollow Road. The park entrance is on the right about a half mile up, and they will meet you in the gravel parking lot on the left-hand side of the entrance road. The Habitat Restoration Team is an all-volunteer group working to restore native habitat in the parks and protected lands of Santa Cruz County. Their program provides an opportunity for people to learn about the natural systems that surround them while helping to restore special and wild places. No prior work experience is necessary. Just show up at the park. They welcome individual volunteers from 8 to 80. Please wear comfortable layered clothing, bring something to drink, and lots of enthusiasm. They work rain or shine, but if things get particularly unpleasant, they'll call it a day. It might be sprinkling a little bit on Saturday morning. Come prepared. Tools are provided. Bring gloves and that water. For more information, contact the program leader, Linda. Her number, 831-462-4041. Linda's number, 831-462-4041. Her email, redwoodrn, that's redwdrn, at packbell.net. Or you can visit their webpage at www.cruzcnps.org. And the Buffalo Field Campaign is having a week of action, February 15th through the 21st of 2016. Join the Buffalo Field Campaign for their upcoming week of action. We are planning events in southwest Montana towns, and there will be an event that everyone everywhere will be able to participate in. We are still in the planning stages and are welcoming your ideas. The week of action will kick off on Monday, February 15th, and last through Sunday, February 21st. And they present a tentative schedule of events. Dates are confirmed, but more details may be coming. Monday, February 15th, they'll have a rally and tabling in Bozeman, Montana, at the Bozeman Co-op and the Public Library from 10 a.m. to 5 p.m., and a rally in downtown. Tuesday, February 16th, a protest outside of Yellowstone National Park's administrative building in Mammoth Yellowstone National Park, followed by a candlelight vigil beginning in Mammoth and convoying to Stevens Creek Bison Trap entrance and ending at Beattie Gulch. On Wednesday, February 17th, it is a national call-in day. They will announce their targets. On Thursday, February 18th, Buffalo Field Campaign and Natives Rally in Helena, Montana. They will asking you to join them in the rotunda of the Capitol Building from 1 to 4. Along with the Buffalo Field Campaign will be members from the Nez Perce, the Gros Ventre, the Assiniboine, Blackfoot, Confederated, Salish, and Kootenai tribes, as we honor Governor Bullock for opening year-round habitat for buffalo on Horse Butte and urge him to expand the lands where buffalo can roam free. They'll also pay a visit to the Montana Department of Livestock. On February 19th, on a Friday, they will rally in West Yellowstone, Montana. On Saturday, February 20th, a rally in Big Sky. And on Sunday, February 21st, a closing dinner and open house at the Buffalo Field Campaign headquarters in West Yellowstone. All these dates are confirmed, but the details may change. Please join us at any or all of the events. Tell your friends and bring them with you. If you're able to come for the full week and would like to stay with the Buffalo Field Campaign, please RSVP so that they can make accommodations. And here's the further information. Buffalo Field Campaign, P.O. Box 957, West Yellowstone, Montana, 59758. That is P.O. Box 957, West Yellowstone, Montana, zip code 59758. For more information, call 406-646-0070. Once again, 406-646-0070. All this information and more, and the telephone numbers and all the other information can be found at www.buffalofieldcampaign.org. Do remember that the Buffalo Field Campaign is the only group working in the field every day in defense of the last wild buffalo in the United States. Here is the Buffalo Field Campaign's update from the field for this week. Based on what we witness in the field every day, the killing taking place near Gardner, Montana, could more accurately be described as a slaughter than a hunt. The tribal game wardens we have spoken with agree, and they recognize that Montana's livestock interests have organized the circumstances to shift blame away from themselves to the tribes. There is obviously something terribly wrong when every last buffalo to migrate through the Beatty Gulch area ends up dead, or when hunters feel so desperate to kill every buffalo they see. Whether or not tribal hunters view their hunts as supporting the larger management scheme, the Interagency Bison Management Plan, government agencies, and affiliated tribal entities certainly do. There is no moral or scientific justification to the idea, perpetuated by the management agencies of surplus buffalo, and safeguards allowing buffalo safe passage between Yellowstone and Montana are sorely needed. We will never and will never stand against treaty rights, but we will maintain a steadfast opposition to the current management that uses hunting as a means to eradicate buffalo. As currently practiced, the hunt is an extermination plan set up by livestock interests to ensure that buffalo never reclaim the lands that are their ancestral home and birthright. It is fundamentally wrong and immoral for hunters to be led to believe that if they don't kill the buffalo in this way, that the buffalo will just be slaughtered anyway. So long as buffalo die, the livestock industry and the governments don't care who does the killing or how. Contrast this to the tens of thousands of elk in the region who have been implicated in the transmission of brucellosis, yet no one is claiming that there are surplus elk, and no one is targeting them for transmitting diseases to cattle. The welfare ranchers don't want to lose their foothold on control of the grass, so the buffalo, who they see as competitors, must die. Hunters are in fact serving livestock interests no matter an individual hunter's intentions. The buffalo death toll is rising quickly. More than 50 of the country's last wild buffalo have been killed by hunters since last week. Midweek, over 500 buffalo migrated into Montana nearly all at once through Beatty Gulch at Yellowstone's northern boundary. Being in the midst of this ancient phenomenon is at once one of the most beautiful and most heartbreaking experiences. The migration of hundreds of buffalo is such a beautiful sight, a flow that has purpose and integrity, so simple in its power, timeless and perfect, seemingly unstoppable. But this ancient march is also heartbreaking because it leads to so many buffalo straight to their deaths. As we expected, word of this migration spread quickly, and hunters arrived en masse that night, the following day, and through the weekend. We expected a massacre, but through the course of days, the majority of the buffalo threatened to cross various lines, edging toward areas where they might be hunted, only to retreat back in the nick of time. Frustrated hunters were driving all over the basin, even through the park, following us, glaring at the Buffalo Field Campaign, wanting to blame us, looking for buffalo that they could kill, but finding few. Those few were gunned down rapidly at the park boundary in acts of haste and desperation. Many have been shot and wounded, fleeing into Yellowstone where hunters cannot pursue them, left to die slowly or walk forever with bullets in their flesh. On Sunday, frustrated and determined to get their buffalo meat, hunters in pickups and on foot crowded around the park boundary, watching a family group of about 30 buffaloes slowly make their way towards Beatty Gulch. The firefight that ensued that morning ended the life of 28 of those buffalo. The 8 survivors, 2 of them shot and wounded, fled up the mountain and away with their lives. Make no mistake, Buffalo Field Campaign fully supports treaty rights and tribal sovereignty, yet our first priority is to the buffalo. What is taking place here is an extermination plan, and hunters, white and tribal, are being used. We have to work in solidarity to demonstrate this, to end livestock control, and to get the buffalo through migration back on the landscape in great numbers so that the proper, respectful relationships can be restored. Buffalo will take care of the people, but the people need to take care of the buffalo first. All this information and more at www.buffalofieldcampaign.org. And the Sea Shepherd Conservation Society flagship set sail for the Southern Ocean in this story from the Sea Shepherd Conservation Society. Sea Shepherd's flagship, the Steve Irwin, has departed from Fremantle, Western Australia for the Southern Ocean. The ship's departure makes the official commencement of the organization's 12th Southern Ocean Defense Campaign Operation Icefish 2015-16. You can watch the departure video on their website. Led by the returning captain, Siddharth Chakravarti, the Sea Shepherd will once again defend the pristine waters in Antarctica from poachers with the aim to shut down illegal activities in what is the world's last great wilderness. Sea Shepherd will employ direct action techniques to fill a law enforcement void that continues to be exploited by the Japanese whale poaching fleet and the two remaining illegal toothfish vessels, the Viking and the Kunlun, also known as the Taishan, which will continue to threaten the survival of the fragile and wild Antarctic ecosystem. The Steve Irwin will be the only proactive enforcement presence in Antarctica once again this year. The shadowlands of Antarctica are under threat, and we are the only form of protection to the marine wildlife in these unregulated regions. Other than offering direct and immediate protection to the oceans, we intend to investigate and document the illegalities and work with law enforcement agencies once again to aid and close out existing investigations worldwide, said Captain Chakravarti. As Captain Chakravarti and the crew of Steve Irwin depart for the Southern Ocean, Sea Shepherd has called on governments who are responsible for upholding the laws that protect the Southern Ocean to intervene against poaching operations. Sea Shepherd should not be left to defend Antarctica alone, said Captain Alex Cornelison, CEO of Sea Shepherd Global. For the past 13 years, our ships and crews have shone in an international spotlight on both the illegal whaling and more recently on illegal toothfish operations. Now it's time for the governments to step up and take serious action to address the issue of poaching in the Southern Oceans. Managing Director of Sea Shepherd Australia, Jeff Hansen, said Sea Shepherd needs reinforcements. 76.9% of Australians want the Australian government to send a vessel to oppose the Japanese whale poaching fleet. Australia has been commended for taking Japan to the International Court of Justice, but now the government needs to take responsibility for enforcement by sending a ship to oppose the whale poachers. You can get more information at www.seashepherd.org.au. And direct action has been taken in defense of historic farmlands in California. This is a press release from Occupy the Farm, as found on the Earth First Newswire. On Monday, January 11th, contractors with the University of California Administration began construction work on the southern portion of the Gill Tract, a historical farm sold to the University of California in 1928 under the condition it would be used for agricultural research and education. Contractors Gelati Brothers laid surveying stakes in the ground, pulled down fencing with an excavator, and began trampling the land with a bulldozer. The next day, after working hours, about 15 individuals entered the Gill Tract to remove the surveying stakes, marking the paths for the heavy machinery brought to pave over the last large-scale plot of high-quality urban farmland still available in the East Bay. The mobilization of the group Occupy the Farm was led by senior citizens from the community. University of California is privatizing this section of Gill Tract for the construction of a high-end senior-assisted living facility by the Belmont Village Corporation, alongside construction of a Sprout supermarket and a parking lot. On a separate location, senior residents of Albany gave interviews for a short film on the issue. Strong popular opinion in favor of keeping this land for farming was consistently disregarded at city hearings, explained C. Madison. There has always been a clear alternative and strong opposition to paving over this land. Ed Fields, another senior resident of Albany, who has consistently challenged the project at public hearings, explained, "I think the University of California is being very short-sighted in leasing this land to an assisted living facility and a supermarket. This land was set aside for agriculture and research. That's needed now more than ever." Senior Albany resident Jackie Hermes Fletcher explained that the monthly costs of the proposed assisted living facility far exceeded the income of local residents. "Me as a retired teacher, I could never afford something like that. It's not about affordability, it's about profitability." When asked if he would consider living in the facility to be constructed, senior Albany resident Rafael Gonzalez stated, "No, I don't want to be locked up in one of those things, even if I could afford it. That is not a wise use of the land." Then on Wednesday, January 13th, Sprouts inaugurated a new store in Oakland. From 7 a.m. to 10 p.m., farmers and community members organized a meditation sit-in, held banners, and distributed flyers calling for a boycott of Sprouts until they canceled construction over the Gilch cracked. By early evening, over 25 people had gathered to protest Sprouts. They set up a projector to screen the Occupy the Farm film, distributed popcorn and snacks, and informed Sprouts employees and community members about the history and the struggle over the Gill Tract. Protests at the new Sprouts store in Oakland continued daily. On Friday, January 15, store managers called Oakland Police Department to remove the protesters. A contingent of about 20 police officers who went to the location determined that the protesters were fully within the law and even asked them to move their banners and sit in further toward the entrance of the store in order to leave the sidewalk open. Community members, students, and UC faculty have put forth an alternative proposal to use all 20 acres of the historic Gill Tract as a center for urban agriculture and food justice, serving the University of California's mission of research and education for the public good, while also operating as a productive urban farm that provides students, workers, and community members with access to affordable local produce. This proposal better aligns with UC President Napolitano's Global Food Initiative, as well as the sustainability and climate mitigation policies of the state of California. We have tried every formal and institutional role for a more democratic decision on the fate of this land, explained Gustavo Oliveira, spokesperson for Occupy the Farm. But the UC administration and their corporate partners only reconsider their plans for privatization when opposed by organized direct action. Recently, the Indigenous Land Access Committee, along with Occupy the Farm and other groups, are calling for a walk on the land January 24th at 3 p.m. on the Gill Tract, which is on the corner of San Pablo Avenue and Marin Avenue in Albany, California. And once again, that is on January 24th at 3 p.m. And down in Australia, a tree sit has been set up. Logging has been halted and endangered species protected in this story by Ed Hill, GECO, as found in the Earth First newsletter. Conservation has halted logging in the Quark Forest in Far East Gippsland of Australia on Tuesday. A person is positioned in a tree platform 30 meters, about 100 feet above the ground. Ropes from the platform are attached to machinery, preventing logging from continuing. The contentious logging area contains high-quality habitat for threatened species. State-owned logging company Vic Forests has not conducted a pre-logging threatened species survey as required by law. Citizen science surveys conducted by GECO have recorded two listed endangered species in the area. An endangered long-footed potoroo was recorded by a remote fauna camera 2 weeks ago, and last week a population of critically endangered East Gippsland Calaxius fish were photographed in streams bordering the logging area. The critically endangered East Gippsland's Calaxius fish is only found in the Quark Forest and was only described as a species in late 2014. Logging impacts the species by increasing sediment runoff, reducing water yields, and disrupting stream flow. Both species are highly restricted in their distribution and only occur in Far East Gippsland. Vic Forests claim a survey for threatened species was not needed in this forest because apparently they do not exist here. We've managed to find two endangered species in just a couple of weeks. This proves the forest is high-quality habitat that should have been subject to pre-logging surveys to identify endangered species habitat, said GECO spokesperson Ed Hill. Last week, we submitted reports to the Department of Environmental, Land, Water, and Planning documenting the presence of endangered species. Vic Forest should be stood down and the forest must be protected as endangered species habitat, said Ed Hill. It should not be left up to community groups like us to do the work of the DELWP in identifying and monitoring endangered species habitat. The management actions for these species are inadequate and allow extensive logging in important habitat, continued Ed. The Victorian government prioritized protection of Vic Forest logging interests over protection of endangered species, he continued. Quark Forest is a stronghold for these two species. Extensive logging currently occurring throughout the Quark Forest are placing their future in danger. Quark Forest needs urgent protections to protect its biodiversity and create an important connective corridor between Arunindra Plateau and the coast. Protest and threatened species surveys will continue until Quark Forest receives protection it deserves as a stronghold for biodiversity, rainforest, and threatened species. And Sea Shepherd removes illegal gill nets from endangered vaquita porpoise habitat in this story from the Sea Shepherd Conservation Society. On January 15, 2016, the crew of Sea Shepherd Conservation Society's vessel, the MV Farley Mowat, removed an illegal gill net from the Gulf of California's vaquita porpoise habitat. This is the first gill net recovered during Operation Milagro II, since the Mexican government authorized Sea Shepherd Conservation Society to remove gill nets and other illegal fishing gear. Sea Shepherd launched Operation Milagro II in November 2015 with the objective of stopping the extinction of the endangered vaquita porpoise. For the past 7 weeks, Sea Shepherd Conservation Society's research vessel, the RV Martin Sheen, has patrolled the vaquita habitat to stop poachers from deploying gill nets that are known to indiscriminately catch any species of fish or shark or drowned marine mammals and birds. The MV Farley Mowat just arrived in the Gulf of California to assist the RV Martin Sheen. The vaquita are the smallest of cetaceans and only inhabit the northernmost part of the Gulf of California. They are one of the most endangered marine mammals. Scientists estimate that there are less than 97 surviving vaquita. Although all gillnets are dangerous for the vaquita, the greatest threats to vaquita are gillnets used to catch the Totoaba fish due to the size of the opening of the mesh in the nets. As a similar-sized animal, vaquita also swim into these gillnets, become entangled, and drown. Both the Totoaba and vaquita are listed as endangered and protected in Mexico. However, the black market trade in Totoaba's fish bladder drives the poaching of the fish and is driving the extinction of the vaquita. In an effort to save the vaquita, in April 2015, the government of Mexico enacted a 2-year ban on the use of gill nets in a 13,000 square kilometer area covering the entire northern part of the Gulf of California. The MV Farley Mowat spotted the illegal gill nets on its first day patrolling the vaquita habitat. A former U.S. Coast Guard cutter, the MV Farley Mowat is a fast interceptor ship designed for coastal patrols and capable of quickly locating and approaching with speed. The ship is also equipped with a small rigid inflatable speedboat, a crane, and a newly constructed net removal device. With my experience chasing poaching vessels in the Southern Ocean and Mediterranean Sea, as well as patrolling the Gulf of California in early 2015, I am confident that the RV Martin Sheen and the MV Farley Mowat would be able to patrol the gillnet-free zone to help ensure that gillnets are not used, commented campaign leader Captain Una Layol, captain of the MV Farley Mowat. Upon spotting the gill net, the crew of the Farley Mowat immediately began retrieving it, and the Mexican Navy was notified. For more than 6 hours, the crew of the Farley Mowat worked alongside the Mexican Navy to retrieve the nets. Captain Loyal continued, "With the help of the Mexican Navy, we were able to remove approximately 1.5 miles of gill nets and release 12 dogfish sharks. Unfortunately, the gill net was in the water for at least several days and killed approximately 60 dogfish sharks as well as 3 species of juvenile sharks, including 2 species of protected hammerhead sharks. Sea lions were also seen eating Totoaba from the net. Despite the 2-year ban on the use of gill nets, enforcement of such a large area is difficult. With its 2 vessels patrolling the Gulf of California, Sea Shepherd Conservation Society hopes for the miracle of a survival of the vaquita porpoise." And you can get more information at www.seashepherd.org. And the California Department of Fish and Wildlife has moved rescued fish back into the Merced River. In this story from the California Department of Fish and Wildlife, CDFW on Friday plans to release approximately 600 rainbow trout that were rescued from the lower Merced River a year and a half ago. In the summer of 2014, water flowing from Lake McClure was too warm for these fish in the Merced River to survive, and emergency action was taken to rescue 60 adult rainbow trout from the river between Cocker-Huffman Dam and the Snelling Road Bridge in Merced County. As a general rule, the California Department of Fish and Wildlife does not normally rescue fish unless they are threatened or endangered species, said Greg Kohlenborn, CDFW senior hatchery manager. In this case, the drought forced us to take action to preserve an important species in central California. The fish were transferred to CDFW's Merced River Fish Hatchery near Snelling and housed in a temperature-controlled fish-rearing tank until the that were purchased with emergency drought funds made available by the legislature and the governor. Keeping the fish in those tanks was also a precautionary measure to prevent the spread of disease to other fish in the hatchery. CDFW intended originally to release the fish in the winter of 2014 to force a delay of the release. The fish remained in the hatchery for an extra year where they respawned and produced hundreds of offspring. In 18 months, we went from 60 to 600 fish at Colonborn. Releasing them now will give local anglers a great opportunity to catch some nice fish this summer. Once the fish are released, CDFW scientists will monitor and survey the river to check on the health of the trout population. And you can find more information about this at www.wildlife.ca.gov. That's wildlife.ca.gov. And new rules are proposed to better protect Florida manatees. Thanks to efforts by the Center for Biological Diversity and its allies, the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service has proposed to revise its wildlife viewing regulations at Three Sisters Springs in Florida's Kings Bay, the only place in the United States where people can swim with manatees. The current draft rule proposes to limit the number of people allowed in the manatees' vital wintering sanctuary, which is a move in the right direction but doesn't go far enough. People should not be allowed in the water with manatees during the coldest months of the year when these creatures are fighting for survival. It's well past time for this destruction to stop, especially with so many manatee viewing spots just feet away from the water. You can find out more information about manatees at www.biologicaldiversity.org. And unfortunately, that's all the time this week for the Earth First Update. The Earth First Update is presented on Free Radio Santa Cruz, 101.3 FM, and www.freakradio.org Thursday nights at 9 o'clock. You can also hear a rebroadcast of this show on Free Radio tomorrow afternoon at 3 o'clock as part of Environment Friday. If you're in the Moscow, Idaho area, you can tune to KRFP Radio Free Moscow at 90.3 FM Wednesdays at 1:15 p.m. right after Democracy Now! And you can sometimes hear the Earth First Update in Boston, Massachusetts on WZBC, Truth and Justice Radio, on Sunday mornings from 6 to 10 a.m. WZBC broadcasts on 90.3 FM. You could also go to radioforall.net on the web. That's radioforall.net, where you can download or listen live to this or previous Earth First Updates. And please ask your local nonprofit community radio station to carry the Earth First Update every week. It's free to download at radioforall.net. The Earth First Update is a production of Earth First Radio and is produced in the studios of Free Radio Santa Cruz when we have a studio. Thank you for listening, and do tune in next week for another edition of the Earth First Update.